Hey guys, welcome to the Indie Game Development Podcast. Here we tackle the challenges of indie game development head-on, from the technical side to the emotional side, and we talk about the secrets to conquering self-doubt on your journey to crafting games that people are going to love. Subscribe so you don't miss another episode, and if you haven't already, give us a rating and review so that this podcast gets shared with more people, because we'd really, really appreciate it. Ready? Let's go. Hey guys, I'm Brandon from Sasquatch Beast Studios, and I'm working on a game called Samurado, and this is a really, really special episode. I'm really excited because I'm here with Zach from Earthtide Studios. Thank you so much for joining me today, Zach. And he is working on an incredible looking 2D game called Bird Knight. And Zach is coming into the game dev scene as an audio expert. This guy is amazing with audio. We're going to play some stuff so that you kind of get a feel for what he brings to the scene. And so my goal with this episode is just to kind of nerd out about some game audio stuff and sound effects and just learn as much as I can from Zach here, because I don't know anything about sound and I need to know more. So I hope you guys enjoy. All right, Zach, thank you again for deciding to do this interview. I really, really appreciate it.
No sweat, mate. No sweat.
All right.
I am Zach Knight, and I am a record producer, composer, sound designer, game developer, and all around jack of all trades and master of a couple, but not many. I'm actually pretty stoked to be able to jump on this podcast and talk about game audio and games in general, because very passionate about it and also very passionate about sharing knowledge with people so that other people can try and make good creative things. So
awesome. I'm really glad to hear that. So you already told us who you are, which is awesome. And just tell us a little bit about Bird Knight, what you're working on. And you specialize in music and audio because you've been in the record production business for quite some time, which is just fascinating to me. For a big part of your creative career, you told me you've been a part of that. So just tell me a little bit about all that as well.
For sure. There's a lot that you just asked just then, so I'll see where I can go. I'll start maybe regarding Bird Knight, because that might make it a bit easier. So
sure.
The reason why the game is called Bird Knight is because my last name is Knight and my wife's last name is Bird. I've been part of the music industry now for about 20 years or so, and I've been composing for nearly 25 years or so. So, and I wouldn't say I'm a master composer. I would say that I know my way around writing lots of pieces of music. Mm-hmm. And up until 2020, I had never once thought that I was going to make a video game. I had only decided that I wanted to do the music thing and I wanted to continue. Obviously, I only decided about music. Yeah, suffice to say, we write this piece of music. And the song's a bit like orchestral and a bit heavy, and my wife and I did all the vocals on it as well. And then we sat down and we went to my friend Tristan and said, oh, can you do some artwork for this? We'll release it as a song. And he did. And that artwork actually ended up coming out and looking pretty cool, because he made a character for the Bird Knight. I was talking to a friend of mine who's another game developer. And he's like, you realize that you've basically just made a video game, right? I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, this is a video game. You've got like your full plot. You've got a character. You've got a world. Like, why don't you just turn it into a video game? And I'm like, I have no idea how to do that. And he's like, well, you know, why don't you look at Unity? And I'm like, okay, cool. And that's sort of the tale of how Bird Knight began, from a piece of music, and we still haven't actually released that piece of music.
That's a really cool story, though. So it's all
thank you.
Music. Yeah, and somehow that doesn't surprise me, coming from someone in the music industry, right? Music is going to come first.
Yeah. I imagine. But you did ask about my music background, and I haven't really mentioned anything to do with that. So I'm happy to share a bit of that. So I mentioned I was 38. I've been writing music for about 25 years, and I started playing in music probably when I was about 5 or 6. So I do, as somebody who spent most of my professional career working in the heavy music industry, I do have a classical background that I have basically just had put on hold for like 15 years. Fast forward a bit, I'd been working with bands and writing a bunch of music and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I started to build the brand of Earthtide Studios, doing a bunch of records, and slowly but surely started to make a name for myself as the go-to guy for vocal production, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, suffice to say, I've been doing that for a while, and then obviously started to go from there to go to Bird Night, and I still do production work, and I now do compositional work as well. There's a lot more to unpack, but suffice to say that that's sort of a bit of the answer regarding all of that.
That's amazing.
You asked me, I've been doing this for a while. So
you've been doing this for a long time. Yeah. No, thank you. That was, so I've got a really good sense of, just how expansive your knowledge base is now. So I've been dying to play some of your stuff so that people can hear just a couple of little, and I'm not going to play the whole song, just a couple of snapshots so that people can get a good sense of what types of stuff, and you prepared some stuff for me ahead of time. Tell you what, I'll play the song right now and then you tell me a little bit afterwards.
Call it off, do what you must to get by, but I won't give you no more of my time.
Oh, that was a strong intro. I really liked that. So yeah, tell me a little bit about Headlock.
I might actually get you, after I say a bit more of it, I might get you to jump to the like bridge section as well. Actually, go for it right now. Go for it right now. And then I'll give you the context.
Playing right now.
You got one foot in, you just won't leave. You're red or you're up, no middle ground. Take your empty words, you bitch, so don't.
All right, that was really cool. Was that, okay, so was that you singing? Do you do that or no?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's
good. That's my vocals.
I didn't know that. That's really, really cool.
So I'm not a particularly good singer, but I am a screamer, as you would call it.
Gotcha.
And I do a lot of different styles of, they call it fry screaming. So
that was a really cool bridge section there.
Thank you. So that song is actually the latest release from a band that I had started up in 2015 called Color and Shade. I actually have since very recently left that band to focus purely on the game studio and Earthtide Studios as well, just because I don't have the time to do that anymore. So I basically wrote most of the music for that song and recorded most of it myself, actually, here at the studio. And then we did the drums. I got the bass player to come in and re-record and add some extra stuff. And the other guitarist came in and recorded a few little bits. And then Beck and I worked together on the vocals and basically ended up getting that song sorted. And then I did all of the mixing and editing and mastering on it. And we recorded live drums at a studio actually not too far from my house. Yeah, and then I put it together. We made a film clip for it. We put that song out. I think it came out mid-late last year. What's up next?
Yeah, what's up next is Canvas. And you told me before, I don't remember if I was recording or not, but you told me that you wrote this one for your wife. Do I have that right?
That is correct. All right. Canvas is a song for my wife, Laura. And yeah, have a listen. This one's a bit slower.
All right, here we go. Playing now.
Thank you.
going to skip forward a couple seconds here. Oh, that was a really, really nice intro, though. Like, the whole thing was really good. So, yeah, you wrote that for your wife. It's very beautiful, especially at the start there. You, as you said, it was a little bit slower at the start, but really good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can tell you. So basically what happened is I'm very open about this kind of stuff in general, but I've basically struggled with anxiety and depression for most of my life. And it wasn't until I met my wife, who's, I would say she's the most emotionally stable person that I know. Until I met her in 2015, that I found that I had essentially like a home base emotionally again, after leaving home when I was 18. And yeah, so basically what had happened is she gave me the opportunity to be able to launch myself out of this destructive situation, kind of similar to what actually you had happened to. Like, she basically every day was just like, you need music stuff, so I'm going to give you my office and you can use that, and that's your music space. And then she's like, oh, you keep wanting to do this production thing. Okay, cool. Go ahead and do it. And I will like support you to try and do more of that stuff. She was basically pushing for me to like do the production thing, do the like music thing, and try and pursue the creativity, do what I wanted to do. That's and incredible. So, yeah, absolutely. And so she basically, it's thanks to her that I had the guts to be able to go and like try and pursue the thing that I wanted to do. The line in the, where it kicks up into the crescendo is stay forever, stay inside my heart, stay forever. They'll never tear us apart. It's very cliche, but like, I don't care. yeah. And the biggest musical influence for that was a combination between heavy music and just straight up Hans Zimmer.
I have one more track that I'm wanting to play. And this is, there's no lyrics in this one because this is game music. This is your trailer that you are going to be using. Is this for the trailer for your game, or is this going to be a trailer for something that I'm not allowed to mention yet?
This is actually going to be a trailer for the start of the release of content on the Bird Night channel.
Okay.
But I mocked this up over a couple of days as one of the first pieces of music inspired. The actual song itself that you'll hear is very rough and incomplete.
I won't play the whole thing, but that's like, okay, so that's a rough song according to Mr. Zach here. And you said you spent a couple of days making that, is that right?
Yeah, a couple of days working on that. I will say, out of that couple of days, more than half of that time was just building out an orchestral writing template, because it's absolutely nuts endeavor to build an orchestral writing template.
I can imagine. So, okay. Riding right off of that trailer music there.
Yeah.
I don't know anything basically about musical composition. So this kind of stuff, the fact that one person can make a song like that, that sounds orchestral, like, I don't know how many instruments were in that. You probably know. Well, you made it, so you would know. But it's like magic to me, the fact that one person can make a song like that. I don't understand how it's possible. So without like, you know, going into a full-fledged tutorial mode or anything like that, just like really high level, explain to people that just like how can one person do this? How is this kind of music created? Is it all software? Are you doing things with actual instruments in your office there? Just break down the very, very high level process for me to kind of break down that wall.
For sure. So that's a nuanced question, because the short answer is it depends, which is not a great answer, but that's okay. I'm going to start with that and then give some resolution. So I actually have a MIDI keyboard that sits just next to me, which is the equivalent of a piano. And I use that for this particular style of music. I use that as my launching point. So either that, or I'll play it on guitar and come up with an idea, or I'll actually hum it on my phone as a voice memo. And what I usually do is I'll start off with like a melody or a rhythm, and build it up from there. I could play around on the piano and like essentially play around until I find some chords I like, or I can do that on the guitar as well. If I'm writing orchestral music, or in general, like I would call it like hybrid orchestral music, like modern-y orchestral with some sample stuff in there and all of that post-processing, et cetera, rather than like traditional orchestral music, I may start on the guitar and I may actually end up keeping the guitar in the music as well. But in terms of the writing process, because I'm more of a guitar player, generally I'll usually start on the guitar and then change that to piano. However, in this particular case, for the Bird Night stuff, I'm specifically not starting on guitar to force myself to try and write something different, because essentially I'll lean into certain tendencies, which will end up not sounding as necessarily in the style that I want them to. Now, with all of that in mind, there's a few really important things to take into consideration. There's the how you can do it technologically wise, and then there's the how you can actually write the piece of music, and then there's the why you should be writing the piece of music. There's actually a kind of a three approach that really goes into it. So I can explain the technical side of it very easily, mm-hmm. but essentially that kind of means moot if you don't have these other two things.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to lean into the how, like why writing the song first, because I actually think it's the most unfocused area when it comes to writing music. And it's the most important thing because it's what people gravitate to. So I'm curious for yourself. I know you obviously love soundtrack music. Just straight away, if I was to say, can you tell me three game soundtracks that you want to listen to the most, like you feel gravitated towards the most, or the ones that just are the ones that you love and you think you're probably going to love them forever? Just three game soundtracks. Just go for it.
Hollow Knight, Ori and the Blind Forest, and Final Fantasy, any of them. Final Fantasy VII also.
All right, awesome. So I can tell you there's a very strong reason that you, like very large likelihood that the reason you want to listen to those pieces of music is because all of them have an incredible story behind the creation of the music for each different one. There's lots and lots of games out there that have fantastic music, but when the piece of music has gone into being created, there's been no story. And then the music has been created and it comes across. And that's often where you'll listen to a game and you'll be like, wow, this music sounds good, but like, it's not memorable. Mm-hmm. You don't remember it. And that actually happens quite a lot. What I'm talking about is I'm talking about the song story, why a piece of music is created, why it matters. And that's the hardest thing, to be honest. That is the hardest thing to be able to gravitate towards and actually obtain. For indie game developers, I actually think it's their strongest point to start with, because it's the thing that they can already do, even if they have no musical knowledge. So like, for instance, with Samurado at the moment, you have a story behind your game. Yes.
It's very rough, but yes.
Okay. So if you were to sit down and write down like a paragraph or two on the story and what emotions you want people to have when they load up the game and they have that first theme music or the menu music come up. You don't have to tell me right now, but you and your wife could probably sit down and brainstorm something and write that up.
Right.
So that is your, that's your launching point. That's your, like, where you start when you're focusing on writing your piece of
what
music.
What you want that's people to feel. Point. Yes?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Exactly. So when I said I spent 2 days working on that piece of music, that trailer music, right? But I spent way longer than that trying to decide what emotion I wanted people to feel when they listened to it. And that dictated what type of instruments I used, what key I played in, what kind of, like, tone people heard, because it's very minor. It's got a little bit of ethnic stuff. It starts off with that, like, Mongolian throat singing thing going on, which is a bit different and a bit left of center for orchestral kind of stuff. Then it goes into, like, a real trailer style thing with, like, the choppy, really super fast strings and things. And then it goes to that really big, like, huge brass, full orchestra kind of sound, but there's no bottom end. Like, all the percussions disappeared, and then it comes in with these big crescendo boom, boom kind of sounds to, like, emphasize stuff rather than just being, like, full on the whole time. But at the very start, along with the voice, there's also these, like, pretty little, you know, mallet kind of sounds going on. And there's, like, a little piano thing that sort of pops in as well. And the strings that go across it, there in the background, there's actually quite a bunch of different, like, creepy evolution style strings where it's, like, essentially just going up slowly but surely and getting more and more and more and more away from the pitch of the song and sounding more and more and more dissonant to give a feeling, an underhanded feeling that, like, something's wrong. And that's what I wanted people to feel like. I wanted people to feel like, oh, it's kind of like, I don't know, when you say, you know, you load up a trailer for a movie or something like that, and then you're not even looking at it, but something happens and you hear something and all of a sudden you're like, and it has your attention.
Yep.
That's the thing that I wanted people to have when they listen to this. They'd be like, why did it do that? And that's kind of the whole thing behind how I went about wanting to write that piece of music.
Okay.
And so what's really important is when people are writing, when to help you and other people who are listening, when you go to write your piece of music, or you decide what you want written for your piece of music and you contract somebody else to do it, you're having reasons behind things, and purpose is the most valuable tool that you can have as a creative person. And it's the same for development anyway, like, you know, why your character's doing what it's doing, the story behind your game, why you want that particular mechanic, not just because that's the mechanic that is in that game or someone says that it's cool. Why do you want it? Why does it matter to you? Why things matter to you comes across. And that's why those particular soundtracks that you just mentioned, all of them, all of the songs on those soundtracks would have gone through that process. Every single one. I would especially say Ori. Like, Ori is really focused on the why from every single song.
Yep.
Every note.
That whole game seems tailored to making people feel things. Yeah, visually and
absolutely.
And auditorily. The audio.
It's audibly. All, yeah. Audio, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so that's a big part of it. And I would argue that that is the most important part. And a lot of people kind of dismiss audio a bit when it comes to stuff involving many creative things, but especially in the games industry, it's always kind of left to last.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really important takeaway from that would be that when it comes to audio in games, and I know this is going to sound, you know, coming from somebody who is an audio person, I'm always going to have a strong opinion on it, and that's totally fine. But it's a third of the player's experience.
Yep.
You've got the player's experience, like, manipulating and controlling what's going on. You've got the player's experience, what they're seeing. and you've got the player's experience, what they're hearing. Suffice to say, audio is actually a third of the player's experience.
Yep.
But I don't genuinely feel in a lot of games that it's given a third of the time. And it's a challenge because when games do actually allocate that, and certainly the games that you mentioned, I would say generally a lot of them would allocate not necessarily a third, but a lot of resources to those things. Mm-hmm. It shows. It really shows. And, you know, honestly, if a game is done really well when it comes to audio, the music will grab you, but in general, you'll actually just play the game and it will be part of the experience unless it's specifically intended not to be part of the experience and be like a standout thing.
Right.
You know, that's based on design. So there's your answer in regards to the first thing. So we'll go with the how I do things mechanically. And then there's the compositional stuff because there's a bit of crossover there.
Okay.
So if someone out there wants to get started writing music, most people who are building video games, usually most people are using a PC. If they're not, they're using a Mac. If they're using a Mac, it's actually easier with audio.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Macs have their own inbuilt audio processing system. And a lot of Macs actually come with audio software called Logic, which is really good. However, the first investment that you need to make is a piece of equipment, actually, called an audio interface. And I'm going to give, Brandon's probably going to mention it later on anyway, but I'm going to give him a lot of resources on things that people can get their hands on if they want to do that kind of stuff.
Yes, please.
But an audio interface that's really important and super useful is one that is going to be high quality that you can afford. Now,
so this is a piece of hardware that's going to be sitting on your desk or in your room somewhere.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So I have quite a different audio interface to essentially almost what everyone's going to be using. My actual audio interface that I'm using right now that everything is running through is 23 years old.
Wow.
And it's still running. It runs on FireWire. It has no preamps in it. It just is an audio converter, but it's a very powerful one.
So what does it do?
So, and I'll preface to say very quickly, 95% of people who would be listening to this podcast who intend to do anything audio-wise do not need to get what I have. A lot of the big composers and producers and all that kind of stuff who do game audio don't necessarily need to use an interface like this. So I'll preface that to say you don't have to go out and spend $2,500 on a recording interface to be able to do really awesome audio in games.
Okay. That's good to know.
So what an audio interface does is it allows you to be able to record audio and also process audio properly inside a DAW, which is a digital audio workstation. So essentially it's like the best way of describing it is people listening to this podcast know what Unity is, they know what Unreal is, they know what Godot is, they know what game engines are, right? Mm-hmm. A DAW is the game engine for audio. It's okay. Like how it used to be, where you literally had a mixing console that could be like up to the size of a car. And you had all of this rack equipment, physical rack equipment, all these synthesizers, guitar amplifiers, and all of this kind of physical equipment. It's all in one piece of software.
A DAW.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, in a DAW. Now, I use one called Cubase. I really like Cubase because Cubase, in my opinion, is the best one if you want a premium one, is the best one for anything involving games and films. Cubase actually have a higher end version of theirs called Nuendo. Cubase is from a company called Steinberg. And Nuendo, which is a slightly different version of Cubase, is actually the industry standard for film and video games for high-end stuff. And the reason being is because you can actually be working in Nuendo and make updates in real time that will talk to your like will actually talk directly to your middleware software like Fmod or Wise or whatever, and then directly to your game engine. But also, like, a great example would be stuff like, you know, when you're playing a first-person shooter and you go here and then the music changes to here and the music changes to here, you can actually have audio scenes inside Nuendo that do that. Nuendo was what they used on, like, Breath of the Wild as an example.
Mm, okay.
Right? Cubase is very similar to Nuendo. In Cubase, I can actually natively put a video inside my audio software and actually make sound design and compose along to a video inside my piece of music software, which is really super useful, which is why Cubase is often used for film composing as well. But there are ways around that kind of stuff. The most common and popular one that people know is Pro Tools. Pro Tools was the first one to get picked up by big studios. And Pro Tools is basically like the Apple of the audio world.
Okay.
Pro Tools is also very good. They're all great. It's basically the same logic as it is with game engines, right? All the names and all the brands and all of the things, they all do exactly, essentially do the same thing with very minor differences. But you can use any competitive DAW to do any audio that you need to do. It just comes down to preference. Like, you can make, if you want, you can make a 2D game in Unreal if you really, really want to, and it'll be fantastic.
Yep.
Unity might be a better choice based around the way that it's designed. But if you're trying to make an open world, massive multiplayer RPG, maybe Unreal's a better choice.
Yep.
Maybe not. Unity still is very, very good. If you're trying to make a game that is going to be a pixel art top-down game, actually, maybe Godot might be a good choice. You know, like, there's reasons for different things.
Yep.
So,
and a lot of it comes down to preference, you know, I think, which I assume is probably going to be the case with DAWs as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another couple of options are Logic. Is a really good one. The DAW that most people use when they're getting started into audio is a DAW called Reaper. Reaper is essentially the equivalent of like Godot in game engines. It's open source and it's one that a lot of people use. Now, I will say that to say that Reaper may be open source, and I referenced Godot, but Reaper is in many ways can actually do everything that every other DAW can do. And it's used by a lot of, especially sound designers. So a great example would be the sound designer behind Hyperlight Drifter uses Reaper. So it's like, it's good enough for many, many people.
It's open source, you said?
Yeah. It's open source, yeah. So Reaper, the way it works is, when you get Reaper, you can basically get full access to it for free. And then after a while, it says, would you like to buy a license of Reaper to contribute towards it?
Mm.
You don't actually have to do that. I recommend that you do, because obviously you're getting a piece of really powerful software. And the license is not that expensive compared to other DAWs. Like, for instance, if you want to go out and buy a Cubase Pro, which I have, I think the latest version of Cubase Pro is about $900.
Okay.
And Pro Tools is a bit more than that. Most pieces of high-end audio software are anywhere between $500 to $1,000. But, like, that's it. Once you've bought it, that's it. There's no other costs involved with the piece of software. Then after that, it's just plugins and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So if you, so these DAWs, do they come with a whole bunch of different instruments? And so
they
you,
do.
You don't need to worry about like, oh, I don't have like, this piano doesn't sound how I want it to sound. Like I need to go buy another pack of instruments
or whatever. Here's the difference. Here's the difference between Reaper with all those other ones.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware, Reaper doesn't come with its own stock library of instruments. It comes with effects and like processes, which really matter, like compressors, delays, reverb, all that kind of stuff. But like, for instance, Cubase comes with a whole bunch of synths and a whole bunch of sounds and all of that. Logic comes with the Logic library where you've got pianos and all that kind of stuff. I will definitely say almost all of the library stuff that comes from these software pieces of software is good, but like what you heard from all of the music that I use uses none of that. I use purchased sample libraries. So now that we've gone into that, if someone's getting started and they want to do audio for their game, personally right now I would say go and get Reaper. Go and get yourself a recording interface. I would recommend that if you want to get a piece of recording, a recording interface, the quality you would be looking at, you'd be looking at getting yourself a Scarlett if you want to be able to just have something that's going to do the job. Mm-hmm. If you want something that's going to be a little bit better and is probably going to be something that you're going to be good enough to use almost forever, buy an Audient, which is Audient. And if you have a pretty good job and you've got money to spare and you want to be the kind of person who gets something and you never have to replace it, buy a brand called RME, which is the brand that I have, but there's a specific interface that they have that is the one that almost everyone gets and then they never replace it. It's called the Babyface Pro.
Babyface Pro, okay.
Yep, and it's a small interface. And it has internal loopback, so you can use it for like YouTube and videos and content and all that kind of stuff as well. Be able to record your screen and record audio and record your computer audio software at the same time and all of that. And it's super powerful. And if I didn't have the one I have right now, I'd be getting that.
Okay.
But that is anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000.
Mm. So if someone got Reaper, which is...
Yeah. Technically free initially.
Yeah. Like if I was going to start learning to compose music, that's where I would start because it's like zero startup cost. That just makes sense. Let me dip my toes in the water and see how it is without spending a fortune on it. Are there, and you don't need to give me resources because as you mentioned, we'll put a link of stuff in the description, but just yes or no, is there such a thing as a stock library of instruments you can get that you can use like copyright free? That are either cheap or free. Do those exist?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome.
Lots of them.
That's awesome.
I'll definitely say when it comes to physical equipment, if you want, you can record, you can write music just using your keyboard and your mouse if you want to. I don't recommend it because it's not very fun. the other piece of investment that I would recommend people doing if they don't want to get a standard instrument, you know, like a guitar or whatever or something along those lines, is that they have a microphone, and it can be a USB microphone, but they have a microphone and they have a MIDI keyboard. And I, for a very long time, just had a brand called M Audio. I still have that same brand, M-Audio. And I just had one of their like Key 49 ones. They're very cheap. You just need a USB cable to plug it in. And all it is essentially, it just sends MIDI signal through your interface to whatever piece of instrument you're using. So it actually itself, it looks like a keyboard, but all it is just sending software signal.
As opposed to using your mouse or your computer keyboard. And I assume this saves you time and makes it easier or both.
You can't really play music. Like you can't, like essentially it goes from being able to like just click and be like, oh, well, I'm going to just, you know, click each different individual note inside the thing, which is extremely arduous and very slow and not very inspirational versus you just like loading up, say for instance, like a string library and just like pressing notes and being like, oh, that sounds cool. Okay, cool. I like that. Record. I'll record that sound. Okay, cool. Like, oh, that's an interesting drum sound. I like the sound of that. Press thing. Oh, you can hear it back in real time and listen to it and be inspired. Essentially, like, you know, when you code something and you test it out, you've seen that it's worked, right?
Yep.
But like you didn't go into the Unity back end and then go through and manually make all the changes yourself.
Right.
You can, but it's really not a good idea.
No.
There's no point. That's why mono behavior exists, you know. Yes. Like yeah. Anyway, cool. So that's the short answer. Yeah, when you get started, I would say doing that. And there are a lot of free instrument libraries out there. Some of the free instrument libraries, I would argue, are just as good as the very expensive paid ones.
Oh,
that's and good there are know. A number of there are a number of good companies that make relatively inexpensive, really high quality virtual instruments. An example of which would be Spitfire Audio. They're one of the most popular ones, and they have a library section of their library called their Essentials Library, where every instrument in the Essentials Library costs $29. Yeah. So just as an example, if you wanted to go out, orchestral music is like the worst example of being able to get stuff that sounds good, by the way, because if you wanted to go out and buy samples to be able to write an orchestral score similar to what I did,
mm-hmm.
You're looking at several thousand dollars worth of software investment in the libraries.
So many instruments.
You can buy
an
all. It's because I have more than just like one library that does everything. I have like a piano. I have like a brass library. I have a multiple string libraries, and you know, sound design ones, and all these kind of things. The world of audio is as vast as the world of game development. You know, like. There's so many, you go to the asset store and you're just like, hey, I'd like to find some visual effects. And you can be there for 2 days looking at visual effects, trying to decide what you want.
Okay.
And you're like, I've done that before.
Yeah, yeah. You're painting a really good picture for me right now. So, okay. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It goes deep, I see.
It goes deep, but it doesn't have to get started, and it doesn't have to feel intimidating. And I'll give you some references to link to some tutorial stuff that both I've made and a bunch of other really helpful audio people have made regarding game audio specifically, that you might want to link maybe in the YouTube video or whatever. Yes. So that people can grab that stuff.
Yes. As Zach just mentioned, I definitely, in the description of this video or if you're listening on the podcast side, we're going to have a whole bunch of just resources. I asked for him to put together a list of free resources. So as things that you can watch on YouTube, free sound libraries would be fantastic. Anything that you've got in your back pocket, for people that are wanting to get started and not have to spend a fortune. So yeah, check out the description for sure.
Absolutely. I will actually say that, on my own side of the fence, I actually have, besides having a YouTube channel where I teach audio production specifically, it's not focused on games, it's just audio production in general. I actually have also made two courses teaching people audio. They're both focused around vocal production, but the knowledge is something that is like quite happy to be passed on with air. One of them is a free one, and the other one is like a 15 and a half hour, 16 hour like course that is all about teaching people vocal production and mixing and all that kind of stuff as well. And I teach the basics of engineering, etc. I will give Brendan the links to those. I will say it's a massive deep dive, might be really intimidating for extreme beginners, but it is a resource that I'm going to give him to pass on if he wants to.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I want to build off of something that you just said, because the word intimidating has come up a couple of times now. And that's when I'm hearing things about all things audio production, that's how I feel. And really a lot of that is just because I haven't looked into it very much. And I know how extensive audio stuff can be. But I feel intimidated, very similar to before I knew how to code for game development. It's like, oh my God, where do I start? Except with audio stuff, there's not only the knowledge side, but there's also the potential of having to spend a lot of money if you're wanting to get yourself some good equipment and all of that. So I'm just wanting to know your perspective. What are your personal thoughts on like an indie developer who is either solo or on a really, really small team? I don't mean like those indie studios that made Hades that have like 30 employees or whatever. I mean like really, really, really small teams of 2-3 people maybe. Like what is the realistic thing that they should be doing? Where, like, what, because it's hard, right? You can spend a lot of money hiring out to get someone to compose your music for you, but that requires a lot of money. Or you could try to learn it yourself, I suppose. Like, what would your recommendation be? Your personal recommendation?
Absolutely. So the first thing I'll say is, if you're an indie studio and you're wanting to make a game that is going to have impact, creating your own customizable audio is really, really important. That doesn't mean to say that you can't use assets to be able to create something that sounds fantastic and still gets the point across. I would say that in a lot of professional games, using assets regarding sound design is far more common than people would think, but it's not done the way that people think, in terms of being like, you get an asset library of sound effects. Mm-hmm. And then you put those sound effects in your game. It's actually not how it goes. What happens is you get those asset libraries of sound effects, and then you layer them and manipulate them together to create a new sound. And that's what you use.
And you do it in
a way that is super. Yeah. And that is the way that most people do their sound design if they don't know how to record anything. And even when they do, spoiler, I actually have a lot of premium sound effects that I have purchased, several thousand dollars worth of premium sound effects from some very expensive sound libraries on purpose, because I knew I really wanted them. Mm-hmm. And then I use a lot of different game-focused audio software to be able to perform those in real time and make changes to them in real time to be able to create a unique sounding experience for every single piece of sound design. So that's a thing that we haven't talked about, which I would say is actually 50% of the equation is sound design.
Yes.
Because sound design is actually just as important as music composition.
100%.
Yeah. So, sound design definitely leans itself to being something that you can use assets for. And also sound design leans itself to something that is easier for people to get started with when they're making sounds and things for their games. Because if you have a microphone like we do right now, and you have anything in your house, congrats, you're a sound designer. Honestly, recording sounds and manipulating sounds is what a sound designer does. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you're going to be able to just be a whiz bang sound designer straight away.
Right.
It's really hard work to do it. Like, as an example, I was listening to a podcast where the sound designers behind Dune were talking about how they did that sound design, and they literally went out and did location sound design for the giant worms by going to the Sahara Desert and recording sandstorms.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's the thing, is when it comes to sound design, at some point, to get the sound that you want, someone's going to have to go and do that actual thing. So that's why you go out and you find really, really good sound libraries, not just your generic ones, like good, you know, sound libraries that are vast and have thought about these kind of things, of people who go to, like, weird, strange caves in the south of Italy and record the sound of someone hitting a bell inside this giant crystal cave. Because that sound is super unique and you can't get it anywhere else.
Right.
And then they'll take that sound and they'll put it in and they'll use it as an example, blended with a bunch of other stuff, for the sound of when you get an ability in Ori of the Will of the Wisps. Spoiler alert, that's probably what they did.
Okay.
But that's the point, is that like, that's how you create those unique, interesting, fantastical sounds, is you take things and you manipulate them. And I will be giving you a list of lots of free sound design options, and also two particular YouTube channels which I think are really, really good to help people understand that you can actually go out there and make sound and go out there and make your own unique sound design. It's time. It takes a lot of time to do sound design, but you can absolutely make your own customizable sound design. What's his name? The YouTuber who's doing the is the Australian one? He's doing the Viking game,
Lost Relic Games.
I think it is. Yeah. So most of the sound design that he does, you probably notice it when he's sitting there doing his videos, like the sound of like the skull dropping. He's literally just him just going like hitting his mouth and then making like weird mouth noises and then. And that's the sound of the skulls dropping.
He includes that in his devlogs. I remember he brought out a frying pan and like a knife, just went into his kitchen and got some stuff and just kind of sliced the blade against the frying pan to kind of get a nice, like, I think it was like a sword being unsheathed or something. I don't remember. But just really creative little uses to get sounds.
Yep. And that is the world of sound design. So like, I would recommend that people, once you get started, just think like, what do you want things to do? And then like, you know, how do you want to make the sound? Like if I, for instance, right now I have this camera cap sitting here right now that I have that sits in front of my camera. And occasionally I'll use it as a sound to like test it for an equip sound. And I'll just be like, and I'll test to see if that's a usable sound for something, you know, or like I'll grab a glass and I'll be like, and then I'll turn that into a note. Or whatever, you know, lots of different things that you can do to make sound design. I would recommend people who are doing sound, who are trying to get started doing audio regarding their games and they've never composed music before, start with sound design and start to create your own sounds and or manipulate sounds from sound libraries that you've got. Like, you know, you want to make like, an ice spell sound. So you find the sound of like running water, you find the sound of like crackling. You know, you find the sound of like a bit of a boom or something like that. And then you layer those together and then do a little bit of processing inside Reaper to it and put some reverb on it. And then you do a whoosh sound before it and you've got whoosh. And that's your spell.
I use Audacity to do these things. Is that okay?
Audacity is fine. I would recommend that you get your hands on Reaper.
Okay.
Personally. I think you'll find that Reaper will be significantly more powerful for you. Audacity is fine, but the conversion rates that Reaper does is much better for you.
Okay, good to know. And yep. Reaper is the open source one, yes?
It is the open source one, yeah. It is a small fee to pay for a license for it when you decide that you want to pay the license for it.
Gotcha.
I do recommend that people do pay for software that requires being paid, but Reaper is a great example of something where they allow you to evaluate the software until you feel like you want to pay for it. But it's usually only a 30-day thing kind of thing.
But which is great for people that want to get their toes wet and learn or see if it's for them or decide like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm going to hire out or whatever. So
exactly. So regarding sound design, when getting started, I would recommend you do sound design first. If you have never done anything before, it's a lot easier to get started. I am not here saying that being a good sound designer is easier than being a good composer. They're both, masterful sound designers are the kind of people that will like, they'll look at objects and they'll be like that. And they'll be able to make something and you'll be like, oh my God. How the hell did you do that?
Yeah.
Or the people that you'll see those videos where you actually see people doing real-time sound design with random house objects.
Smashing watermelons and stuff with hammers.
the most common thing that you would hear when it comes to like breaking bones is celery, celery.
I've seen that. Those are really, really fun to watch. Just watching people create sound effects in video form is really neat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to composing, I would say focus on getting yourself a MIDI keyboard and trying to learn the basics of piano. Especially if you want to do orchestral music, most modern orchestral composers will do what they call a sketch, which is essentially where they'll sketch up the basics of what their chords and melody are for the orchestral song, for the song, and they'll do it on piano. Most of the time, people who have the training, you know, will potentially notate it. if you don't know anything about music and you don't know anything about sheet writing music and all and reading music and all that kind of stuff, probably don't want to necessarily start with that because it's going to be really, that's more intimidating. Like I would definitely say, as an example, I've been a composer for a long time. I know how to read music. I know how to notate music. I don't ever do it. I never notate music. I just remember what I need to play. Now that's annoying for some people if they don't have the memory, but regardless, that's why you've got your music software, because you can just play back and look at where the chords are and be like, oh, okay, that's what I played.
Okay.
So yeah, start with the learning the very basics of piano. And when I say the basics of piano, like just knowing what the name of the keys are on the piano, that's very easy. And if you're writing music at the start, when you look at a piano and it's got the white and the black keys, just play everything on the white keys initially. If you play everything on the white keys, it's going to sound good. It may not necessarily sound exactly like you want it to sound. Like you might find that, you know, things sound a bit too happy because, you know, if you're playing everything on the white keys, that's generally what you can do. But just start there, because if you play everything on the white keys, what it's going to do is it's going to always be in key. The main common thing that people would be doing if they're playing from the start, from the center of the piano, which is where you usually start playing, is if you're playing from the center of the piano, you're playing from the C in the center, and that's your starting note, you're playing C major, and you're basically playing like the happiest sounding key.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're making like a cozy indie game, might be a great choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to make something sound a little bit more Hollywood, go up to the next key and start on there and use that as your starting point. And that is going to be Dorian. It's a mode that allows you to basically be able to be like, sounds very Hollywood. And then basically what you can do is you can just keep going up the keys and using those as your starting point and then playing the eight notes around that, but using that as your center point, and it will change the feel of it, but still keep it in key. But you come back to that as your starting point. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's called mode. So there's basically every octave you've got 12 notes and you go up an octave, but you've got, there's usually eight notes in key. And so basically, if you want to go up an octave, you've got to go up 12 notes. But if you want to go within key, you've got eight notes within that key, up and down.
Okay.
Yep. And so then that's where you would go. And yeah, I would basically say start learning the basics of piano. And if you want to write orchestral music, start on piano. And then from there, I will give you some links on some people who show how to get the basics from piano to start to getting to orchestrating. It is a lot. It's definitely, like, I would argue that it's probably one of the hardest choices to make when it comes to style of music to play.
I believe it.
And write. Yeah.
It's really complex.
That doesn't mean to say. Yeah, it's really complex. It's also just time consuming as well.
Just doing a little bit of research on my own. I was on Fiverr and I noticed that the price, and some of them price it by like for 30 seconds of song. And so I just made it, what does it cost for 60 seconds for a song? But yeah, orchestral stuff was always the most expensive. So that told me straight away, like, oh, this must be the most time consuming stuff to make. So that makes sense to me.
It can be, yeah. I mean, I would definitely say that, like, that isn't necessarily always, because you've got to think about how good somebody is. Because I would say that, interestingly enough, most game composers who are the ones that you have heard about, none of them are on Fiverr. And most record producers who are going out there trying to do something really good are generally not on Fiverr as well.
Yep. I can believe
it's
that.
It's like, yeah, it's not, it's a place that you can get stuff done. It's not necessarily like a recommendation to look at if you're thinking about getting something high quality.
Okay. I wanted to ask about your feelings about Fiverr, so I think I just got it.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not a bad choice. It's just the best thing to think about it is this, right? if you're going to go to the trouble of investing your money into getting somebody to create music for your game that is your baby and you're really passionate about, I would personally say your best choice is find somebody that you trust knows. 90% of the big games out there that people love, the jobs for the audio for those games was never advertised. It was literally just like somebody met somebody else at a convention 2 years ago and were really friendly and made friends with them and kept talking to them and asked about how they were doing and touch base and just generally like tried to be a friend. And then that person was just like, they'd finished working on the game that they were working on and they started the new one and they were like, oh, we really want to work on the theme song for this. Oh, yeah. You know, maybe we should give it to Zach. Yeah. He's been doing some pretty cool stuff. All right, we'll just give it to Zach, see what he can do with that music, you know, or anyone else or whatever. And that's how it works. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that just because you know someone, you're going to have the job.
No. But you know, it sounds familiar. Like even the story of Team Cherry with how they found Christopher Larkin, and if you guys don't know, Christopher Larkin's the composer for the Hollow Knight soundtrack. And I don't know if he was big before Hollow Knight. He was obviously very skilled, but he's obviously a very well-known composer now. And they knew each other before that game. I believe that they were friends and had worked on projects from their animation studio beforehand. So that just kind of goes, it's corroborating everything that you just told me, essentially. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that on a counterpoint, if you're somebody who's listening to this who is a composer or is a sound designer and you want to go out there and you want to get yourself known, the best thing to do is to physically go to game meets or to physically go out to conventions. And I know, you know, depending on where you live in the world, that may be hard to do. So when you can't do that, do things like become part of Discord servers, specifically become part of indie dev servers and start helping people with no ulterior motive. And that's the key factor, no ulterior motive. And it's hard sometimes when you're like out there thirsty to try and get yourself a job. But like, you need to remember that people who out there who are making indie games, sometimes they don't even understand that they need to have a budget for audio.
Yep.
I've actually spoken to a couple of people on your server, some people who were making some pretty good games, and the understanding on how much it's worthwhile them actually investing in putting aside a good budget for audio versus what their understanding of it is very different.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, I'll say this, by the way, there are lots of really good games out there that use assets for audio, and you can do that. And I'm not trying to be here to say that you can't use assets for audio and you can't use assets for your music.
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying.
So I want to be clear. Yeah. We're talking not just about sound effects. We're also talking about music. Yes?
Correct. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You can absolutely do that. But if you want to make your game a special game that is more unique, that is interesting, that is tailored to your vision, creating something that is focused with your vision is going to be what is going to give you what you want.
I'm happy to hear you say that. And that's kind of where I thought the answer would land, but I wasn't sure. So budget, I want to ask, because I know I remember this conversation from the Discord server, and people were kind of shocked by some of the numbers that were thrown around. And I think that's just because people don't really, like you said, people don't think about audio as much. It's kind of like, oh, like I gotta make the game. I got enough to worry about. Let me make the game and then I'll worry about the music. So I have two questions actually in regards to that, because I can see how that would be a problem, because I have to imagine that coming up with a good game soundtrack and all the sound design, obviously, but I do that as I go along because I hate testing things when there's no sound. So just for me personally, that's not really an issue. Sound is being created as I go, but music, I can see how it would be very easy to leave that till the very end, because it's like, well, I got enough on my plate and I don't have a budget right now. So if people want, I'm not talking like, you know, just some generic indie game where it's like a hobby and they're hoping to maybe make $1,000 off of, like, you're not going to go and spend, you know, thousands upon thousands to hire a composer when that's your goal. That just doesn't make sense to me. But if you're wanting to create something special, right? Something that's going to stick out in people's memory, what is a budget that we could expect to be looking at if we were going to hire a composer? And just, I know you need specifics. So let me just say, maybe we don't need them to implement the audio into the game. We're just saying, just write me some tracks. Maybe like 15 tracks for the game. What's a realistic budget?
So that then it all depends on, of course, the style of music that you want and how you want it to sound, and whether or not you want that person to take care of all of the production and the mixing as well. Because just as an example, so that people understand, if someone comes into my recording studio and says, I'd like to record a single with you, they're a band, they require live drums, they require a couple of guitars, bass, vocals, editing, mixing. I might do some synthesis stuff to go in there as well, make it a bit more modern, and mastering as well. It's probably going to take 5 days to record. They'll have to pay for the hire of the drum studio, which might be a separate cost, which will be a separate cost for them, and they'll have to pay for their own strings and drum skins and all that kind of stuff. Doing a single, including having a day of pre-production where they come in and they show me the demo, and basically we just make it, like, check out song structure and all that kind of stuff as well. I would say that's going to be anywhere between 4 to 5 days in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So my budget for about all of that is anywhere between $1,800 to $2,200 to do that. Now, that's my budget. That's not necessarily to say that everyone's the same.
Yep.
If you were to hire me just to mix a song, like, you composed a piece of music for your game. Most pieces of music that you would compose for your game would have more than 20 or 30 musical layers. But say you composed a piece of music and you said, hey, here's my piece of music. Can you now take this and mix this? I'd be like, no problem. That's $400. Just to mix one song. That's what I actually charge normally. However, when you're a composer in video games, usually the presumption is the composer is also the mixing engineer, and they can basically make everything sound great, and that's included in their cost, and it's presumed that they're going to do it, and it's usually something that they eat as a price. So then when it comes to how much the budget's going to be for 15 songs, if someone said to me, what's the budget to write 15 songs for a game, and I want the songs to sound like electronic music. And this is not to throw electronic music musicians under the bus, because there are a lot of musicians out there who do electronic music that takes a lot of time and effort, mm-hmm. as well. If someone says, I want to make electronic or chiptune or just game music in general, right? Something that's not necessarily orchestral. You'd be looking at anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000.
For 15 songs?
Yeah, yes. $5,000 to $10,000.
Okay.
For somebody who doesn't have heaps and heaps of compositional credit from big games, but he is a good composer.
Okay.
And doesn't have that reputation to be able to justify more.
Gotcha.
Right? Orchestral, I would say you're looking at anywhere between between 8 to 15. Okay.
Gotcha. What if it was like easy old school 8-bit soundtrack?
The first option still.
Ah.
If you want it to be good, it's still going to be at least between 5 to 10.
Okay.
Now, it's pretty common for people to get the job of doing sound design and music at the same time. Just as an example, and I will definitely say that this is something that I am currently doing at the moment. I actually have an indie game, a Metroidvania, that I just landed a contract to do the music for all the environmental music and the sound design, and then another composer is doing the trailer and the boss music and the menu.
Okay.
So I'm doing around 10 songs for it, plus all the sound design, and I'm doing the integration as well, like all the FMOD integration, but I'm choosing to do that for free because I want to test doing all that in the level of a game that I'm going to be doing for that before I do it for my own.
Nice. Okay.
That game is going to be built over a. It's already on Steam. It's called Rat Trap, and it's actually going to be showcased at PAX, which is really cool. But that's actually going to be the development of the audio for that. I think is going to be about over a 16 to 18 month period, and I'm quoting for what I'm doing. I'm quoting more than the five figures, mm-hmm. more than just flat five figures. I won't go into specifics, and there are discussions regarding that with the developer as well,
okay.
in terms of what kind of quote, you know, and value and all of that kind of stuff. There's that, and then there's another level, and the other level is if you want a soundtrack that sounds like a great example would be Ori. Right? You want a soundtrack that sounds like Ori, right? Ori is real orchestra. It's actually a real orchestra recorded live. It is not a sampled orchestra.
Wow.
So there's the composer. There's the orchestrator.
Yep.
There's the live orchestra. There's all the engineers to record a live orchestra, which I personally, if someone said to me, hey, Zach, can you record a live orchestra? I would be like, I need help. A great example would be, obviously we're talking about Ori, right?
Mm-hmm.
A great soundtrack that the composer from Ori, Garrett Coker, did is Ark Survival Evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he did Ark, right? Ark was recorded at Abbey Road with a 93-piece orchestra over 3 days, because orchestras are bloody impressive.
Wow.
All of that music was recorded over 3 days.
That's nuts.
Yeah. I expect that their budget for that would have been more than six figures for all the audio on that game.
That doesn't surprise me, because there's so many people involved. It's absolutely insane.
So if you want to go, if you're the kind of indie developer who dreams of having real orchestra, recording a real, even the most affordable real orchestras that you can get, there are a lot of them in Europe that are specifically hired out to do this kind of stuff for films and games. They literally tailored for this kind of thing. And they even, if you're a composer and you don't know how to orchestrate, I'm not particularly great at it. I would get somebody else to do the job for me. They do a better job. It's a whole different skill. And they have people there who are like, you can pay to have our orchestrator orchestrate it for us for you and help you make sure that it's going to be good. You know, you can hire, and I know this sounds a lot, but like you can hire for 30 grand, you can pay 30 grand and have a real orchestra and record your game music with real orchestra. And it will sound bloody awesome.
Yeah.
And the difference between that versus Ark is going to be like the sound quality is going to be like something that you're not really going to care about that much. You know, like it's still going to sound incredibly awesome. Quick caveat though, Hollow Knight only has three or four live instruments and the rest is all programmed. He is not a live orchestra.
Okay. Well, that's...
So that's cool, humbling actually. To know.
Yeah.
That's humbling to know, right? Currently at the moment in my headphones, I actually have, I think we mentioned it before, but I actually have the soundtrack to Star Wars Jedi Survivor playing.
Yep.
Which Gordy Hub, I would argue, one of the best modern composers for video games that live, right? He actually won Grammys for this soundtrack.
Okay.
So it's like big really, deal. Really awesome. This is like, it's big deal, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, he's actually written more Star Wars music than the original composer from Star Wars now.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he's written like 80 hours worth of Star Wars music. So
I have a question.
Yes.
Because we were just talking about Hollow Knight, so this feels like a good segue into it. Tell me about motifs, and I know like the teeniest tiniest bit of what a motif is, or at least I like to think that I do, and maybe after listening to you I'll find out that I'm completely wrong, but I remember watching a couple of YouTube videos on the creation of the music for Hollow Knight and the fact that they use which was a new word to me at the time, which was motifs. And I was like, what the heck is that? And then I came to learn a motif is you have the same kind of tune playing in different parts of the game in different ways to evoke different emotions from you, but kind of have that same, like, it's the same tune.
I'll explain it.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
That's okay. So a motif or a leitmotif, it's a memorable phrase that is used, and it's basically the hook, right? Christopher Larkin uses a motif in Hollow Knight, and it's everywhere. And you hear it. You're like, oh, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's the melody. It's the melody that you remember.
It's the melody.
I would say it is the melody, right? A lot of films do it too. You would hear it in Interstellar. You would hear it in Inception. Hans Zimmer does a lot. You would also hear it a lot in Ori as well, especially Ori, the Will of the Wisps. There is the na 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 na. That's the motif.
Yep.
And that happens everywhere. The reason why it is really good to do in games is because what happens is you have the opportunity to have lots of music in lots of different places, but you want to have something that solidifies things and makes them sound like they all come from the one cohesive thing, even though one piece of music can sound drastically different to another piece of music. So what you do is if you have a motif, you can use that as your way of essentially just like gelling pieces of music that otherwise wouldn't necessarily work together, because you're using a motif and you're changing up. Like, you might have a song that's really slow, that's like in a kind of like a slow ballady kind of feel, but it has the motif. And then you have an action piece of music that's like really fast, and the motif like slightly changes some of the notes, or it's in a different key,
yep,
but it's still there, and it's like, or it's spread out across. Like a great example would be like, what's his name? The second last boss, the Hollow Knight. Yeah. So the music in that has the motif, but it's like really like glaring going on, and it's really like kung, kung, kung happening. Whereas, you know, when you listen to like the motif in Dirtmouth, it's just like really somber and sad. And,
yep.
You know, but it's still the same motif. And so that is what a motif is there, essentially, to be able to deliver that cohesiveness between pieces of music or within a piece of music to allow things to sound like they're cohesive. Now, I would definitely say there are probably classical composers out there who are saying that I've totally butchered that and that I've not given a good example of what that really is. I'm talking about specifically for games. But yeah, a motif, really, really hard to nail down your motif. I'm very happy to say that I've actually written the motif for the Bird Knight game. So that's
awesome.
Hardest bit's done. Not really. Not really the hardest bit done, because just as an example, to give people a bit of perspective on how much music that's going to be in Bird Knight, because of the way that I'm choosing to do our dynamic music system, we're actually going to have 40 songs, but there's going to be 6 to 7 different versions of every song.
Oh my God.
Yep. And there's also going to be, for every level, there will be 7 different versions of the ambience as well.
Wow. And I take it you're doing all of that, yes?
Or all most, of it. And I'm actually it? Already, I've already started conversations with FMOD on how that I can create a unique system inside FMOD to be able to control the changes and have manipulations happen to different layers of the music in real time, so that every single person who plays the game will have a different sonic experience.
Tell me about FMOD, because I've heard you mention it before, and yes, I had never heard of it until I saw you throw in that term around in the Discord server. And I actually noticed, yes, there is a free plugin on the Unity Asset Store for FMOD. Is that what you were there talking is. About? Or is this, are you talking about something else?
So FMOD is middleware, and middleware is super powerful. All the games that you love use middleware, and the main two that people use are FMOD and WWISE. And what it does is FMOD is essentially, it's one of them. I wouldn't say either of them are better. I would say I'm using FMod because I have access to be able to talk to the people at FMod, mm-hmm. and game people that I know have used FMod. FMod was what they used on Hollow Knight, as okay. far as I'm aware. What it is it's a middleware. So basically, you've got Unity, you've got, say, Cubase, and then you've got FMod. And FMod, actually, you create your music in Cubase, and you export all of your music, and you don't put it into Unity. You put it into FMod, and then you make game objects inside Unity where you want your audio to be triggered to. And FMod has all your scripting and all your controls and all your layers and all your dynamic adjustments. And you can do it in real time and test changes to your audio in real time with FMod. And you can create all of your scripts and everything inside FMod. But all you do in FMod is you go, I want to make that go quieter. And then FMod just changes its script in real time to Unity to do that for you. And you don't write any code in FMod.
Well, that's incredible, because even doing something simple like that without FMod, like, you know, you're writing a coroutine or whatever, adjusting the volume on the audio source in Unity yourself, you're having to script all this out yourself. So you mentioned doing a dynamic soundtrack with your game. So I assume FMod is going to make that a lot easier for you to do.
It's going to be possible to do with FMod. Yep. It's not going to be possible to do it without FMod.
Okay.
An example, and just so you know, the audio engine that is in Unity is actually the FMod audio engine.
Oh, okay.
Unity bought FMod's audio engine off them to use for Unity.
Okay.
A lot of people might not know, Unity actually has its own inbuilt reverb system, which is super powerful. It allows you to be able to change the reverb of music and or sound effects and sound design in real time based upon spatial stuff in the game.
Yep.
Designed in FMod, triggerable from FMod through to Unity as well.
So the FMod that you use, you went to the Unity Asset Store, you searched FMod, and it's a free... I don't know if there's a paid one or not.
So there is. So I actually went to FMod's website.
Mm-hmm.
I went to FMod's website and I got two different things of FMod. I got FMod Studio and I got FMod for Unity.
Ah, okay.
Both of them are free. So FMod Studio is where you put your stuff in and you make your changes to and all of that kind of stuff. And then when you're running Unity, you run FMod for Unity, and FMod for Unity does the talking between FMod Studio and FMod and Unity.
Okay.
And there's also FMod for Unreal, and there's also FMod for any custom game engine as well.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
And the way it works with FMod is, depending on the revenue that your studio is earning, depends on whether or not it costs you anything or not.
Ah, okay.
So the most expensive that FMod ever costs is $18,000. Which doesn't seem like much, really. Like, if your game is earning over $1.8 million in revenue, then it's more than 18 grand to pay for FMod. So, but for indie studios, if your game is earning less than $200,000 revenue, it's free.
That's always the threshold that I see, is $200,000. If you're making under $200,000, you don't have to pay for anything, it seems to be. So, okay.
But if your budget for your game is under $600,000 in terms of what it costs you to build the game, the most that you have to pay is $2,000 for FMod.
Oh.
Which is pretty cheap.
Yeah. In the scope of 600
grand,
that's certainly cheap.
Super cheap. Yeah, absolutely.
So I have a very important question to ask you, because and I think we delved into it. Well, not really. We didn't touch on this. When do indie developers, when should they start worrying about creating music specifically, I'm talking about? Because you said it's often the thing that gets left until the last minute. And I assume that if I were to ask you, you would say that's a mistake. You should be doing it earlier. When should people be worrying about doing music?
When you've decided to start making your game and you have an idea of what your game is and you have something that's playable and you have a bit of story, start talking to a composer or doing it yourself. Yep. That doesn't mean that you need to get the music started, but start the conversation if you're going to outsource somebody, or start workshopping it yourself if you're going to do it yourself. The earlier, the better.
Okay.
Is my answer.
So what would you say to indie developers that maybe are just hobbyists that want a good soundtrack for their game but don't have a budget to be able to shell out that kind of money when they first start their game?
Get something. Get when the game starts to feel a bit of fun, start exploring your music.
Okay.
And do it yourself. Or see if you can find somebody that you know who is new in the industry and wants to get their toes wet.
Okay.
Talk to them about revenue. Talk to them about revenue share.
Revenue share. Okay. I was going to ask, I assume that professionals that have been doing this for a really, really, really long time, do they not like to do revenue share as much?
No, they do both.
Okay.
They get a flat fee and they get a revenue share as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So if you think about it this way, right? Say, for instance, you get paid, I don't know, you're working for Ubisoft, right? And you get paid $120,000 to do a soundtrack for a game, right? But that's what you're working on for 12 months. So, and you've got a family, you're 40 and you've got a family. Like, it's actually not an unreasonable amount of money that you'd need.
Yep.
Right? Cool. So that's what you get, right? But you've also got an assistant who works underneath you, and all of that kind of stuff. If you just get given a flat fee and you don't have a percentage of royalties that are coming in, after you've worked on like 10 games and you want to take some time off, you kind of need to be able to still have some trickle coming through. That's why revenue share exists.
Gotcha. That makes perfect
sense. And a lot of indie composers will reduce their fee if they think a game is going to do really well and try and negotiate for a revenue share instead.
That makes sense to me. That sounds like a smart business decision to make as a composer.
It is a smart business decision to make. That doesn't mean it's not about trying to be greedy. It's trying about being in a position where you can keep doing the thing that you want to do to help make other people make their passions really good as well. And that's the thing is everyone always gets really scared about talking about money because it's intimidating. The best thing to do is just be totally, totally honest and do it as early on as it's possible to do so you can get that out of the way, get things written down, get things signed off by lawyers.
Mm.
That's a really important thing.
Yep, I imagine so.
And then it is, absolutely. And then move on, do the creative thing.
So you're saying, if someone emails you, if you are making devlogs and someone emails you and says, hey, like I love the devlog, I would love to do a soundtrack, and you decide to go with them, you don't just want to do an email thing back and forth. You want to get a lawyer involved and make sure that you get a contract.
Well, I actually have an invoice which already has a contract in it. And then as soon as they pay the deposit, that's it. Like to start, if someone wants to do, unless it's somebody that I really, 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 really love, and or somebody that I'm personally connected to.
Right.
If you're working with me professionally, you pay a deposit before we start.
Yep.
That's how it works. If someone was contracting you to build a video game for them, they need to give you a deposit so you can pay your bills.
Yep.
I am conscious that it is getting we've been going at this for a while. I'd be definitely quite happy to answer any questions that anyone has. You can obviously hit me up through the Discord if you're part of the Discord, or alternatively, there'll be some links on there. I will say, rather than shouting out Earthtide Studios, I really want to shout out Bird Knight as much as possible. We are in the process of getting our Steam page sorted. Hopefully, Brandon will have some game stuff to show throughout this podcast as well. That's really our main focus right now. But if people are interested in checking it out, they can find us on Instagram at Bird Knight Game.
Instagram at Bird Knight Game. I wanted to give you the opportunity to make sure that give people a chance to find you online. So Instagram is where to go right now. Okay.
Yeah, I actually have my own website for Earthtide Studios if people want to get in touch with me, or you can do so on Instagram or in Discord or through YouTube if you want to as well. I have a lot of videos on YouTube. I will be making new ones, but they will all be focused around Bird Knight.
Awesome. I can't wait to see those, by the way. Zach, I will let you get back to it. I know that it's like 7:30 p.m. for me, but in Australia, you're just about to start the day. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for the time. This has been great, and enjoy the rest of your day. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Take care, man.
All right.
You know, in Australia, there's yeah, nah, and there's nah, yeah, right? What do you reckon? Yeah, nah. Well, nah, yeah. Nah, yeah. Yeah, nah, yeah. And it's basically you've got your, like, you're like, you know, Steve-O was down at the pub and he was just like, yeah, mate, can I have another Carlton? And be like, what the f-?
And that's all I've got. If you loved this episode and you haven't already left a rating and review, please consider doing that now. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more awesome developers like yourself. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.